Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back, folks. There is a lot going on with presidential politics right now. The heat is on. Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics, joins us. Ron, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Neil. Happy to be here.
Ron, there are so many balls in the air that we are juggling right now that could possibly influence this election one way or the other, but the polls don't seem to be moving that much.
No, you know, the polls really haven't moved in quite a while. They're generally showing that President Biden's job rating is in the low 40s, about 40%. And his negative rating is in the mid-50s. None of that's good for him. It also shows that the race between him and Trump is very close nationally. Most of the polls have been showing Trump slightly ahead. And the polls have been showing that Trump is slightly ahead in the swing states. Now, there's some new polls that come out every week, and we have to always be careful we don't jump to conclusions about what any one poll shows. But in recent days, some polling has come out that shows that Trump's small leads in a lot of these key states is actually declined some. So the race is closer than maybe it had been. But you know, there's a lot that's coming out every day, and it can easily change perceptions.
Been a lot of focus on money, the ability to raise money. The Democrats seem to be on a much better trajectory at the present time than Republicans. And then you add to this situation the fact that the RNC and others, now under the leadership of Laura Trump, his daughter-in-law, trying to raise money for his defense fund.
Well, you know, money is important in elections, of course. In national elections, in some ways it can be less important than it is in local elections, because in national elections, the news media, whether it's, you know, this radio show or other radio shows, the TV programs, newspapers, online websites, whatever it might be, are covering the presidential campaign on a granular level every day. So people are getting an awful lot of information, and the campaigns don't have to spend money to do it. But nevertheless, money is still important to get messages out and to turn voters out. Now, the Democrats are raising more money than the Republicans, or at least they have in recent months. And there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, the Democrats control the White House. They're in charge. They have the power. They also control the U.S. Senate. So the party in power, the party that has the White House, usually is in a position to raise more money early than their challenger would have. Now, in this case, the challenger is a former president. But even though Trump's campaign has been raising a lot of money, they're also eating up a lot of money in some areas, paying for Trump's legal fees. And when a political party has to put tens of millions of dollars into legal fees as an extra that they normally wouldn't do, you know, that's taking money away from campaigns. So there's you know, explainable reasons for all of this. And frankly, a lot of it doesn't make as much difference as I think some of the national pundits are trying to, you know, configure it to make out, because ultimately there's plenty of money in this political system, and both sides should have enough if they use it right to fund their campaigns. But that's another question. You know, do they use it right? Some campaigns have money, they don't use it right, and then, you know, you don't know where it goes from there.
How important is it to the down ballot races? You know, the Senate races that are going on, as well as the House races that are going on in a development of a ground game for their campaigns.
Well, you know, of course it's important, because if one party ultimately wins this presidential election by a wider margin than the polls are now showing, which is always possible, that is likely to bring in some close races, whether they're in swing states for the Senate or close congressional races in those congressional districts that are close in swing districts. But one of the things that's interesting is the Trump campaign has been putting out information lately saying that their candidates have to be careful they don't spend all their time just attacking Biden. They claim the Trump campaign's polling shows that Biden, even though he's not a popular president, he doesn't have his negatives are not motivating. They're not going to motivate people to go out and vote to the extent that you may think they would. So they're telling the down ballot people, have your own issues, have your own agenda. Don't just rely upon what's happening at the national level. And I actually think that's smart advice for them.
Yeah, because what's the old adage? All politics are local. You make a bigger impact, right? Even if it is a state, even if it is a U.S. senator that's running statewide.
Well, you know, and one of the things that you see around the country, and this is sort of very inside baseball, but more and more the campaigns have been sort of determined by national messages and national tactics and techniques, and local campaigns are expected to be sort of cookie cutter versions of those national campaigns, and that doesn't always work. You know, we're in a state here in Louisiana that often has issues that are very different than some of the national issues that are talked about, even though I think we, as well as other states, are becoming more nationalized. But people who run political campaigns have to always keep in mind that their candidates have unique pluses and minuses, and that their constituencies have some unique issues. And it's not just a formula that somebody from Washington develops. It's something that each campaign around the country has to develop.
How important, obviously, Trump's been teasing the fact of, you know, he's deciding on his VP nominees at this juncture. How important is that for him relative to momentum moving into the summer months?
Well, I'm one of these people who believe that the vice presidential nominations this year are more important than usual, perhaps than ever. With maybe the exception of 1944, when Franklin Roosevelt was literally dying in the campaign. And he only lived a few months after the new term took office. But I think they're more important than ever for two reasons. The obvious reason is you've got, you know, the two oldest candidates in American history running for president. And the current president is the oldest president in American history. And no matter who wins the election, they're going to be the oldest candidate. So that raises the possibility of a vice president may be called upon to either serve temporarily as president in the case of incapacity, or to actually become president in the case of, you know, let's hope not, but in the case of a death or physical or mental incapacity. And those things are more real given this situation than they have been in the past. The other thing is Kamala Harris is not well thought of by voters across the country. Most voters do not think she is prepared or equipped to be president. And even though Democrats aren't going to tell pollsters that, they do tell one another. Many of them tell one another they don't believe she's prepared to be president and wish she wasn't on the ticket. So she has some unique problems as a candidate. We've seen that before. We saw Spiro Agnew and Dan Quayle and over history, other vice presidents who've had weaknesses. But in this case, you've got a weak vice president in a very close presidential election, and that makes it that much more important. So to answer your question in a simple phrase, I think it's important for Trump to have a vice president who seems more presidential and more experienced and more capable of doing the job of the presidency than Joe Biden's vice president. I think if he can pull that off and also get somebody who is compatible with him on philosophical needs and who has some base of popularity within the Republican Party, would be a grand slam. And I think that's what he needs to do. I don't think his choice for vice president needs to be cued. I don't think he needs to be, you know, ticking off some boxes. I think he needs to have somebody that the American people could say, well, this person may be more than any of the four people running for office this time in the top offices. Would probably be best equipped to be president. So I think that's a challenge for him, and some of the people he's looking at, you know, I think fall way short of that. Perhaps some of them don't. We'll see what he comes up with. But expect Donald Trump to change his mind on who he wants to be vice president, you know, at least a dozen times between now and the Republican convention.
Is there value for him to name one now?
Well, I don't know.
It depends on who. If it fits the bill that you're talking about, probably
exactly.
So. But if not, it could be pretty ugly.
If not, that person's going to be hanging out there, and people are going to be taking a lot of shots at him. But one thing, again, you know, this is unique to this election. If Donald Trump is going to be in a courtroom for a couple of months or more between now and the election, it may be helpful to have a vice presidential candidate, you know, going around the country campaigning and making appearances that he otherwise would have made.
Yeah, for sure. And it's amazing how the dynamics of this election are so different. And I love the way that you laid it out, because I think you're spot on. As it relates to the public's perception of Kamala Harris, as well as what really needs to happen for Donald Trump. But my gut is that the person that you just described is not someone that he is going to migrate to. Probably not,
because if he only wants somebody who he feels comfortable with their total undying loyalty, it might be harder. Now, I'll tell you one candidate who I think could possibly fit the bill, and that would be Senator Marco Rubio of Florida. He ran against Trump the first time. They had some very bad moments of attacking one another, and whether that rules him out or not is another question. If Rubio is the Republican candidate for vice president, then Donald Trump is going to probably have to change his residence back to New York or somewhere. because under the Constitution, if you have the president, the vice president from the same state, they can't get the electoral votes of their home state. And of course, in a close election, you can't give away Florida's electoral votes. It's one of
the biggest
states in the country, and it very well could determine the winner. So that would have to be cleaned up. And that happened when Dick Cheney was picked to be George W. Bush's vice president. Dick Cheney, who had lived and represented Wyoming, moved to Texas, Northern Virginia, and then he moved to Texas. And he was a resident and a voter in the state of Texas at the time Bush determined he would be vice president. So he literally had to fly to Wyoming the day before the announcement was made to register to vote in Wyoming so they wouldn't have that problem. I was always surprised, frankly, that the Democrats didn't challenge that, given the closeness of the election. If Bush could not have counted all of the electoral votes that he had, he wouldn't have won, you know. But anyway, it went through. It didn't seem to be that difficult. It hardly got any public notice, and so there you have it. The reason why I say Trump would have to change residents as opposed to Rubio is actually in the U.S. Senate right now. And he could not leave his state's residence without resigning his Senate seat.
Yeah, I doubt that Donald's moving back to New York, New Jersey, maybe.
Well, maybe he'd move to Michigan or Pennsylvania or someplace this Wednesday. Who knows? You know.
Exactly. Got to get to a break. We're visiting with Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. Ron, you wrote in an opinion piece that was printed in NOLA.com, a big question hanging over the presidential election is President Joe Biden's strength among African-American and Hispanic voters. 2 out of 5 ballots cast for him in 2020 came from these voters. Great analysis. If you would, share it with us.
A lot of talk for some time that the polls are not showing Biden getting the percentage of the vote of African-Americans and Hispanics that he got last time. Now, that's particularly important because the African-American vote is generally voting for Democratic candidates at the national level to about 90%. And when you got 13% of the electorate voting 90% for your candidate, that's a very important political base, obviously. And of course, both parties have been going after Hispanic votes for some time. And the Democrats, generally speaking, were getting a sizable majority of Hispanic votes, not as big of a percentage as black voters, but significant. For instance, last time, Joe Biden got 65% of the Hispanic vote and almost 90% of black voters. The latest polls are showing Biden getting somewhere in the 70s among black voters, which is, you know, anywhere between 12 and 15, 16% short of what he got last time. And even worse for him is that the polls are showing him getting in the mid-40s among Hispanic voters, which is 20% less than he got last time. So there's a lot of concern that, the hardcore Democratic base won't be there for him the way it was there for him 4 years ago, in the way it was there for Barack Obama twice. And when you actually look at the polling, you can see that there is cause for concern. Now, I interviewed a number of people for this piece, and a local political consultant, a local professor and political analyst who know an awful lot about African-American, politics and voting patterns. And I think the conclusion is that most people, I think, including me, thinks that Biden will ultimately get a high percentage of African-American votes, but the turnout may be lower. And, of course, when the turnout's lower, that's almost as bad as losing the vote to the opposition, because many people are not seeing the movement from Biden to Trump among African-American voters that I think some Republicans hope can happen. But there is movement from Biden to Trump among Hispanic voters, and that's going to be a problem. So, when it comes down to it, in a close election, everything matters. Every vote matters. And if the Democratic base of African-American and Hispanic voters don't turn out to the extent that they did last time, that creates a real problem for Democrats nationwide and for Biden's campaign. Now, Democrats tell me, they have time to fix these problems and communicate messages and do what they have to do to get those percentages up. But even though they've talked about that for a while, the percentages haven't gone up. And that's one of the problems that Biden has in general, that the Democrats say, well, we have some new ads and they're great, and the president gives a State of the Union message and seems to do better than he had previously, and they have this issue and that issue, and Trump's got this problem and that problem. But nothing seems to be improving Biden's position. And if your base isn't there to the extent that you need it to be, then you got a big problem.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting dynamic. His State of the Union bump all but dissipated at this time?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, there wasn't much to it. I had done a piece in Fanilla.com and the Picayune about it, and it showed that it really was pretty minimal. And it helped Biden a little bit getting his favorability ratings up among the Democratic Party base, It gave them a little more enthusiasm for him, and which is important, which is something he needed to do. But it really didn't move swing voters. In fact, one poll showed that he went down 3 points among independents. So any kind of a bump there was there has probably already mostly dissipated, and we're pretty much back to where we were before. But there's so much going on in this campaign with the issues involved. The Israeli-Hamas war is a big, big issue, and there's big events happening there every day. So even though it hasn't been getting as much news coverage, same thing for Ukraine.
And Ron, let me ask you this. Where are independents breaking on the Israeli-Hamas war?
Generally speaking, what we're finding here at this point is that there is still significant what I would call affection and support for the state of Israel among most American voters. However, American voters are ready for this war to end, and they're becoming impatient about it. They're becoming impatient with, you know, Netanyahu. They're becoming impatient with some of the things that Israel is doing, and they want to. The American people want a peace deal, and independent voters want a peace deal. The independent voters are not happy with the way Joe Biden has handled it. People who are strongly pro-Israel don't think he's been pro-Israel enough, and people who are somewhat sympathetic to the Palestinian side feel like Biden hasn't handled that well. So Biden's catching it from both ends. And this whole Israel-Hamas war has been a real problem for Biden, and I think it's one of the reasons why his numbers haven't gone up, because it's one more problem added to everything else that he had before the October 7th attack from Hamas.
Let's pivot to the Republican side. Mike Johnson has a one-vote margin. And it seems as though some of the mainline Republicans have been very strategic in the way that they are resigning from Congress to, in some respect, almost really hurt their party because they feel like, they've been abandoned. And it seems to me that they're having a real difficult time creating stability inside the party right now.
Yeah, I think that is the case. And, you know, anytime when the split is close, and this is about as close as you're going to get, just like the Senate's about as close as you're going to get. I mean, essentially, the Democratic majority in the Senate is made up of independents right now. Three independents are giving them the majority they need. And in the House, like you said, you're one vote over the you know, the majority line, and you're actually under the 218 because of some vacancies. So Mike Johnson has an especially difficult problem as Speaker, whether you like him or his philosophy or not. He's in a really hard job. And I do think a lot of Republican members of the House are sort of voting with their feet here by saying, we've had enough of this. They're tired of the way politics works. They're tired of the way Congress works. They're tired of the way a small number of House members can hold up everything and you know, wreak havoc on the whole process. And so they're leaving, and it is making it more difficult for Johnson and his majority to hold tight and to get anything done. So he's, you know, he's in a rough go, and I think he's been very smart. I know a lot of the more conservative Republicans will not agree with this, but he's been very smart making some deals with Democrats to get things done. I mean, that's, you know, if you don't have enough votes on your side, you've got to find some votes on the other side to do the things you want to do. And he's been forced to do that.
And the hard right MAGA Republicans in the House really believe that if they create enough stink and just cause inertia where there's no movement at all, that's going to be positive. I don't think the voters are looking for that, right?
No, the voters aren't looking for that. And, I've been a member of a legislative body where I've had frustrations, you know, about what the majority was doing many times. And when you're not in the majority in a certain situation, you feel very frustrated and powerless. And you want to protest that. You want to take a stand. And I think a lot of what they're doing is like that. I think some of it tactically is crazy. It doesn't make sense. Although on the other side of the coin, I think there is legitimate feeling on the part of a lot of conservatives that Congress keeps spending money with reckless abandon. It's not looking at old programs and old spending, whether they can be cut or modified in some way. And the deficit keeps getting bigger. The debt keeps getting bigger. And no matter who's president or who's speaker, this situation just seems to keep getting worse. And so I think there's the root of some of these things are legitimate policy concerns, you know, that that somebody has to take a stand against all this spending. But on the other side of the coin, some of the things they're doing is hurting themselves, and it's hurting, you know, the conservative political position in the country, because it makes it look like they're not just bomb throwers, but they're creating chaos and they're making the system worse.
Absolutely. Got to get to a break, and we appreciate you joining us, Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. Really enjoyed reading your op-ed, Ron. Well done. By the way, I think you hit it spot on, and always appreciate you joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate it. No.
All right, that's Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. We'll be right back with Ed Norris from our sister station, 105.7 in Baltimore, and we'll talk about the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse when we return. Folks, are containers
selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Ship hits the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which is part of the Interstate 695 system there. Ed Norris from our sister station, 105.7 Fan, who is also a 20-year veteran in the New York Police Department, served as police commissioner for Baltimore and was superintendent of the Maryland State Police, joins us. Ed, thank you so much for joining us.
No, thanks for having me.
Ed, if you could kind of paint the picture of the Francis Scott Key Bridge, what it connects, and the importance to the Baltimore area.
Yeah, it's vitally important. It's, you know, Baltimore's on the water, on the Chesapeake Bay, and the Francis Scott Key Bridge is the outermost crossing for the, you know, over the water there, and it connects. It rides right over the outer harbor. Everyone's heard of Baltimore's inner harbor, right over the outer harbor and the Patapsco River. But it's crucial for commerce and just basic community, but really for commerce, because it's one of those bridges that was actually approved for hazardous material transport and things like that. And there's a lot of industry down there. Like, you know, that part of this, that's actually in the suburb, that part of Baltimore has got like a big BMW plant. It's got a huge Amazon building down there, which employs tons of people. It's just a really busy port. And now they've suspended all shipping into Baltimore's port. So these boats now, these ships will have to go to either, I guess, Norfolk or New York City for deepwater ports.
And the bridge connects, correct me if I'm wrong, because I've been across the bridge and I'm trying to remember, industrial parks on both sides, right?
Correct. Yeah, from like the county down the area, like the Dundalk region down there, which is part of Baltimore County into the city. It kind of straddles the line. It's in the city, but it kind of straddles between city and county. But it's very industrial on both sides. And now, it's affected all the water traffic into the city, to our harbor and the inner harbor. We can't have any more. They've suspended indefinitely, so there's going to be no more shipping into Baltimore.
Your law enforcement background, I was kind of amazed by they talk about how fast they were able to shut that bridge down. It occurred at 1:30 in the morning, thereby minimizing the number of folks that have been impacted by this, and our thoughts and prayers go out to them. But shutting that bridge down, knowing that there was a loss of power on that container ship and that they almost with certainty were going to hit the bridge at some point.
Yeah, I mean, apparently whoever radioed this in, if it was the captain of the ship or the pilots, you know, those ships have to be piloted. You know, the way it works when you get into these big ports is the captains don't even, you know, operate the ships. If our own pilots go out who know the waters better and navigate them back in, someone, sent over a mayday and told people they're going to hit, you've got to close the bridge, get people off the bridge immediately. And I think they really minimized the casualties that way, knowing they had lost power. And of course, you know, you lose power, you can't steer. And that thing, I heard, was 100,000 tons with the containers. So it's not like driving a car. You're not going to change direction very quickly.
So from the video, it looks like a major portion of the bridge that's actually over the water fell in the water.
It did. It was surreal to watch it. I mean, I crossed that bridge often. And just to watch it fall, and it looked like it just went easy, like a Lego set. And then you forget how big that container ship was, how heavy it was. I mean, it's a suspension bridge. But it's just, it fell, the whole span fell in. And now it's in the river. It's in the Patapsco. And, like, you know, when they finished with the rescue/recovery, because the last I heard, they had rescued two people. Both were alive at the time. One refused medical aid. One was in bad shape, went to a trauma center. But they were still looking for six more at least, and they're not quite sure how many people went in the water. And then you begin to, you know, after that, once that's suspended, then you begin the pulling the bridge itself out, which is going to be, I can't imagine how long that's going to take, because it just reminded me, I was a member of the NYPD when Flight 800 went down. And, mm-hmm. That took months to recover the whole plane and reassemble it in a hangar, and it's a massive, massive undertaking, and this is a lot bigger than an airplane.
What has been the reaction of the community?
Stunned. I mean, everyone's, as you would expect, everyone's got stories about, I would just cry. I cross that bridge every day at 4 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock, and then people looking for people who work overnight. It was frantic because there was no communication. And it's just devastating because it's going to, and besides the obvious, I never want to diminish the loss of life and the casualties that are associated with that. But it's also a huge economic impact to the region because this is a port city. And if the port's closed, it's a lot of people whose jobs are in jeopardy, who work on the docks. You ever watch The Wire, season 2, it's the docks.
Yeah.
And that's a real thing.
Yeah.
It's a big thing. And so you have that, and then you have, like, the Amazon plant and the BMW plant and all these other, industrial plants down there. You're talking, the approximate number this morning was 15,000 jobs in jeopardy, plus
you know, the stuff that's not going to get to other cities. That's going to be delayed because if you have to go to New York City, you're going to be waiting in line to find a place to pull, you know, to dock. So it's just, this is going to affect the whole East Coast.
Yeah, they said there were 40 ships still inside the Baltimore port and looking to exit, as well as 30 outside looking to come in. A lot of people don't realize just how busy this port truly is. And it's very unique in the way that it presents itself topographically, right?
It is, and it's, you're right. You know, Baltimore is not a very big, it's a mid-sized city, but I believe it's the 13th busiest port in America. So it's a very, very busy port city. You know, people think of New York, of course, and Norfolk is another big one down here. But Baltimore is a very busy port, and a lot of jobs, people work on the water, they work on the docks. A lot of stuff comes through here, and when this happens, it's devastating, and it's going to affect the whole region. And it's also going to affect traffic because, you know, 695 is part of it, but you know, if they're not on 695 because this is closed, they're going to be on 95, which is the whole East Coast. You know, that's the pipeline up and down the East Coast. So there's going to be, you know, a lot of traffic getting, you know, diverted to the 95 and the other crossings. It's going to be a problem for a long time.
The two times I think I was on that bridge is because I was diverted there because of an accident on, it was either, is it 895? Is that down there too?
Yeah, 895.
And 95 and where we were going. So we ended up having to go around in that outer loop of 695 over that bridge. So critical,
yeah,
to the area.
I don't know what you're doing that end of Baltimore, but like,
well, we were coming from south from D.C. and I'm trying to remember where the heck we were going. I know there's a fort right there at the foot of the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse, where it collapsed. In there, what is it? There's a Civil War fort that's located right there at the foot of the bridge.
Well, the other fort, the one that's going to suffer, is Fort McHenry.
Fort McHenry, yeah.
I'm looking at Fort McHenry right now, actually. I live down the block. And that's the other crossing, which is going to be incredibly congested now because, you know, the Fort McHenry Tunnel is another one of the crossings that covers that same span of water. And that's busy on a regular day. I can't imagine what's going to happen now.
Yeah. Well, best of luck to you guys. Our thoughts are with everyone in the Baltimore area and certainly the families that have been impacted by this. We truly appreciate you joining us today, and it's nice to hear that there's a radio host like myself that spent so many years in law enforcement out Baltimore way.
Yeah, I have a very close connection with New Orleans, actually. I was down there a whole bunch. I was friends with the former chief down there, and they're very similar cities, demographically, crime-wise, so we learned a lot from each other. New Orleans is
absolutely
really just like a smaller version of this town.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Ed Norris, from 105.7 Fan there in Baltimore. Appreciate your time, your insight. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Okunhard Jewelers Talk and text line. Stay with us. Scoot's up next, and he joins us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
All right. They raided Sean Diddy Combs' homes in Los Angeles and Miami, and even if they didn't find what they were looking for, can you imagine what they found? Anyway, we'll talk about that. Also, the tragic story of the bridge coming down. Supreme Court hearing arguments about an abortion pill.
All righty, Scoot's coming your way, folks. Stay tuned. Hope you enjoyed today's show. We'll see you again in the morning.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.